Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, was good!
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Tech Stuff, a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with How Stuff Works and iHeartRadio, and I love all things tech. And it's time for another classic episode of Tech Stuff. This episode originally published on July 30th, 2012. It's titled Spotlight on Dennis Ritchie. So who was Dennis Ritchie? And what were his contributions to technology? As it turns out, they were many and they were significant. So Chris Paulette and I sit down and talk about this influential technologist. Enjoy.
Jonathan and I were talking about topics to record, and we thought, you know, we should talk about one of the most famous or non-famous famous people there are in tech.
Yeah, this is a guy who was incredibly influential in technology. In fact, without him, our technological landscape would be totally different as far as computer science goes. And this is of course, the late, great Dennis Ritchie.
Mm-hmm.
Dennis McAllister Ritchie.
Yes.
Or DMR, as he was sometimes known. Tragically, Dennis Ritchie passed away last year. And, in fact, his body was discovered a week after Steve Jobs passed away.
Right.
And so his death was somewhat eclipsed by Steve Jobs' death, because Steve Jobs had a real cult of personality around him.
Oh, yeah.
For absolutely. Various reasons, mm-hmm. right? He sort of embodied, he personified, if you will, the corporation of Apple.
Yeah.
And so very much was identified with that brand. Now, Dennis Ritchie, his contributions, you could argue, went far beyond Steve Jobs' contributions. In fact, a lot of programmers out there were very much upset that his passing did not receive the same sort of coverage that Steve Jobs did. But Steve Jobs was a much more public figure and was sort of a marketing genius as well. Not sort of. He was a marketing genius. And whereas Dennis Ritchie was sort of an architect of what computers do today. And it was a different – two different types of people.
Yeah, and doing some research on Dennis Ritchie, I feel like that's probably the way he preferred things. He wasn't really the kind of public personality type. He wasn't necessarily looking for the public plaudits, although I think he probably enjoyed being appreciated by others. And of course, really Steve Jobs and Apple wouldn't be where they, you know, where they were at the time of Steve's passing last year without the efforts of Dennis Ritchie and many others who worked with him.
Very true. Very true. And as you say, Dennis Ritchie was a very private man. So was Steve Jobs. But Steve Jobs would also put himself out in front of crowds in order to talk about products. That's not what Dennis Ritchie did.
Yeah,
although he did write one of the most famous books in programming.
That's true.
Which
that's
we will get into.
Yeah. So Steve had a public face.
That's right. Very, very well put. And I have to say that before I really dive into here, I found one article in particular incredibly informative and touching, really, about Dennis Ritchie. And there are a lot of articles out there that have been written since his passing.
Yes.
But the one in particular that I want to mention, because a lot of my information came from this article, was written by Cade Metz of Wired.
Yeah.
And it's called Dennis Ritchie: The Shoulders Steve Jobs Stood On. And it's an excellent read, so I highly recommend you go to Wired and check that out before you turn this podcast off. Write that down, because it's a really good article.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the articles that came out immediately following Dennis Ritchie's passing had sort of a Steve Jobs connection simply because they passed at that time.
Yeah, within a week of each other, yeah.
Yeah, there wasn't a connection.
Right.
Like these guys hung out all the time.
Yeah, it wasn't like Jobs, Woz, and Ritchie all
knocking them
back at the local coffee shop.
No, but I think there's a tie-in simply because those two events were so close together. But yeah, let's talk about Dennis here. He was born September 9th, 1941 in New York.
Bronxville, New York.
Yep. And he passed away in New Jersey in Berkeley Heights in October 2011.
Yeah. We don't know exactly when his body was found tragically. So we don't know exactly the day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
His father was Alistair E. Ritchie, who was a scientist and an authority on switching circuit theory.
Yes.
And he was an employee with Bell Laboratories.
Yes.
Or Laboratories.
Yes. It's
Bell Labs.
It's funny to me going toward the traditional there. His father was Alistair, and his middle name was Mac Alistair.
So, yeah, which, like, son of Alistair.
Exactly.
Very well done.
I liked that.
Yes, I did too.
And it's one of those just little trivia type facts that you pick up when you're researching someone like that. But
yep.
Nicely done, guys.
He was an apt student, and he attended Harvard University. He graduated with degrees in physics and applied mathematics.
Mm-hmm.
And then when he decided to go into graduate school, also at Harvard, he began to work at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, MIT, and he worked in their computer center. And as he worked in the computer center, he became so interested in computer science, he decided that was what he wanted to focus in as opposed to pure mathematics.
Yeah.
Although the two fields have a lot in common with one another.
And this is another illustration of how much of an effect that these computer pioneers had. When he had made that decision, he wanted to get into computer science. It wasn't like he said, "Oh, I'm going to go to Harvard or MIT and get my computer science degree." There wasn't a computer science degree at that time. It's thanks to people like these that we have such a strong computer science field.
And in fact, the work they did end up being the syllabus for those computer science degrees.
Yep.
I mean, like, his work on programming is one of the fundamental foundation blocks for learning about programming and computer science today. So while he is going through this graduate work, he ends up getting a PhD from Harvard. His dissertation was called Program Structure and Computational Complexity, which was something he really did excel at. That became a focus of his. While he was there, working through this, he got a recruitment request from Sandia National Laboratories.
Aha!
And Sandia National Laboratories was a weapons research and testing company. And so they were offering him bukus of cash to be part of their team, but this was in the 1960s, and Ritchie kind of had this philosophy that perhaps a weapons testing facility might not be the place he would want to end up in. And so he turned it down.
Although we just mentioned Sandia National Laboratories a short time ago on a podcast about supercomputers.
Yep. So instead, he went and joined a different lab, Bell Labs, same place his dad had worked.
Mm-hmm.
And he joined in 1967.
That's right.
And he was first put on a project where he was going to be working with a team from MIT, along with a fellow named Ken Thompson. Now, that's a very important name as well.
Yes.
Thompson and Ritchie together have done a lot of work and laid that groundwork on computer science.
Yes.
They were originally working with this team from MIT. Thompson, by the way, also worked for Bell Labs. They were working with this team from MIT to build a new operating system called Multics, M-U-L-T-I-C-S. However, halfway through the project, funding gets pulled. It just decided the project wasn't moving fast enough or it wasn't going to budget. At any rate, for some reason or another, the project was trashed. And Ritchie and Thompson were a little put off by this because they wanted to build an operating system that would support their programming efforts across multiple platforms. And that was a real problem because back in these days, in the 60s, a lot of these computers had proprietary operating systems that worked only upon that computer. So the machine and the operating system were married together. You didn't find the same operating system across multiple types of machines. Kind of the way you could argue Apple works. You know, because the Apple OS and the hardware are so closely aligned.
Right, right. Now, did you mention who had been funding Multics?
I did not.
That would be the Advanced Research Projects Agency, or ARPA.
Oh, gosh. That name sounds familiar.
Yeah.
So since Multics gets pulled, they decided they wanted to continue and try and build their own operating system.
Now, there's something else I wanted to mention about Multics, though.
Sure.
It was a time-sharing system, which means that you go and hang out there and have a nice vacation.
It means that you have multiple terminals that hook up to a centralized computer and that as you are working on stuff, you get time allotted to you to access the computer's processing power.
Yeah. So when you're working on it, that means nobody else is.
But although the way these time-sharing systems worked is that it would switch back and forth so quickly as to seem like everyone's working simultaneously. Yeah. But in truth, if you were to really divide up the time, very specific moments would be allocated to each user, depending on how many users there are for that particular system.
Yeah, but it was single tasking.
Yes.
And something else to note, too, is that this was in a time when the programmer would need to create a series of punched cards.
Yes.
To put this into the machine.
Right.
So your programming is done on punched cards, and then you give it to someone to compile for you and put into the machine. So once you're done writing the program, you hand off the deck of cards and go work on something else.
Right. And then through the compiling process, you find out whether or not your program works.
Exactly. So the programmer, Dennis Ritchie, realized that there are important things going on here. He wanted to change.
Yes.
He wanted to have more of an impact. He wanted to feel like he was more engaged with the process. He also felt like he wanted to work with other people collaboratively on the computer system. You know, these were things that influenced his and Ken Thompson's decision-making where they wanted to do with this next operating system.
So Thompson starts to work on this, and he starts to build this operating system using assembly language. But here's the problem. Assembly language just did not give the full amount of control that they needed to build out an operating system that could manage all the data across all the different parts of this operating system. Because you got to remember, the operating system handles data that's coming from user input. It's handling data from the file system, from any storage that is connected to this computer. It has to handle the data that comes out of the processing after the CPU has processed it. There's a lot of different moving pieces here. Well, virtually moving pieces.
Yeah.
Or pieces that are virtual. Anyway, there are a lot of pieces. And so the problem was that the assembly language was not sophisticated enough to do this in an elegant way. So if the assembly language isn't doing it, what's your solution? Well, if you're Dennis Ritchie, your solution is build a new programming language.
Yeah, the assembly language was so close to the kernel, to the operating system that, or to the, I'm sorry, to the hardware, that it just made life really difficult.
Yeah.
And so his solution didn't take you much farther away, but it was far enough away that it made a big difference in the way you would write computing
programs. At the time that he developed, and the language he developed was the C programming language. At the time that he developed that, that was considered a high-level programming language. Today, we would not say that. We would say it's a much lower level because there are higher-level programming languages that have been developed since then. But at the time, it was considered a high-level programming language, meaning that it was a further step out from the physical layer of the computer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of interesting. Like, first, before he did that, they started to think about using Fortran to try and create the Unix operating system. Unix was originally spelled U-N-I-C-S, but because we pronounce that Unix, they just replaced the C-S with an X eventually. So that's why it's spelled U-N-I-X. And it was a play off the Multics name that was what they were working on before. Mm-hmm. So they tried to use Fortran. Well, Fortran is a programming language that was really, really well suited for scientific applications. And it was too limited for them, so they abandoned using Fortran. There were a few other options, but they were, again, meant for very specific applications, and they wanted something more general.
Mm-hmm.
So what Ritchie did was he looked at a programming language that Thompson had developed called the B programming language, B as in boy, which, depending upon which theory you're reading, could have been named after his wife or a different programming language. Anyway, Ritchie took that, and then
I thought he got stung on the day that he wrote it. Yeah, by a bee, and then said,
there you go. Could have been. Who knows? I'll get Thompson on the phone. We'll have a chat. Chris and I have a lot more to say about Dennis Ritchie, but first let's take a quick break. Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, then look no further than the Marketing School podcast hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Hsu. It is the number one marketing podcast in the United States and number 15 on business in the United States. And it has amazing guests such as Alex Hormozi, Layla Hormozi, Cody Sanchez. We pull in these amazing interviews with other people that are not only great marketers, but actual operators. And the icing on the cake is Neil and myself were also operators as well. So we share learnings from the trenches. We share secrets that we otherwise wouldn't be sharing with other people. And we also share other advantages that will help you get ahead of your competition. So all you have to do is listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, was booted!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and Vlastar runs the business. I understand now. It's a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Gene. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So Richie, he ended up looking at the B programming language, and then he developed his own programming language called C. Mm-hmm. And again, the only reason that he built the C programming language, or at least the original intent, was just so they could build Unix. And it's kind of important to realize that, because I think, based upon everything I've read, and granted, this is all from secondhand information, it wasn't something that Dennis Ritchie wrote himself, it feels like he never knew how extensive this language would go throughout the computer field.
Mm-hmm.
He was doing it for a very practical purpose. He needed a different language in order to build the operating system they wanted to have.
Right.
So he never really realized at the time that C programming language was going to become such a huge fundamental part of computer science. If he had, maybe he would have felt the pressure a bit more.
Well, actually, in a way, he didn't need to feel as pressured. It's good, maybe, that he was sort of divorced from that. See, he was trying to use this this old machine that they had at Bell Labs. It's mm-hmm. It was a Digital Equipment Corporation, also known as DEC, PDP-7. And Unix, you know, they put Unix on that machine, or that was the point of creating Unix, was to operate this machine, but also to operate others.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't long after that, after they were doing this, that they got a PDP-11
yep.
computer. And the nice thing about Unix was it was computer independent. So they would be able to use Unix on multiple different computers, not just that one particular machine.
Right.
So, you know, they were able to migrate Unix and run it on that other machine and use the programming language C to write software for it.
Yeah, this was a fairly new idea. Unix was not the first operating system that could be used on different machines, but it was one of the first.
Well,
and
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. No, I was going to say, if you'll remember, we not long ago, a few weeks ago, we did a podcast about the beginnings of the internet, and
mm-hmm.
one of the first challenges, and those guys were working on these challenges about the same time as Richie and Thompson were working on their trying to solve these problems. They had multiple computers in different locations, and they all used a different operating system.
Right.
So, you know, these computer pioneers were doing something very important. They've realized that this is just a pain in the neck.
Yeah.
And you had to find ways to get computers on the same operating system, running the same programming language, talking to each other in the same protocol in order to get them to work more efficiently.
Well, and also the idea behind this is that for programmers, it makes things way easier.
Oh,
because
yes.
Otherwise, if you're a programmer and you're going into programming, you had to learn how to navigate specific operating systems for specific machines,
mm-hmm.
which meant that you might be an expert on two, maybe, or three machines max, three different types of machines.
Right.
But then you get introduced to another one, and the operating system might be completely foreign to you because each one had its own.
Mm-hmm.
The approach that Ritchie and Thompson had meant that the same operating system could be found across multiple different machines. You
mm-hmm.
could just learn that one, and once you've learned that one, you're good to go.
Yeah.
You can program for all sorts of machines, which was a revolutionary development in computer science. You know, it's easy for us to forget that now because we're so used to that world, even though in some ways the old world is kind of coming back with various manufacturers making very proprietary approaches to things so that you can't you know, the methodology you use to work on one set of devices doesn't work on another set. We're starting to see that again now. But for a long time, it was this philosophy of let's develop something that's going to work across the entire landscape of computers. So that way, you know, people can really concentrate on mastering programming and not have to worry about mastering it for just one set of type of computational device, whether it's a computer or handheld device, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of the development of Unix. And it's hard to explain the impact of this operating system. Part of the reason it had such a huge impact had to do with the constraints that AT&T was under. Because you had, you know, AT&T, they're the head of what Bell Labs was.
Yeah, the parent company.
The parent company of Bell Labs. One of the reasons why Unix worked so well is that it ended up being distributed across various research facilities and universities.
Yeah.
And the reason why it was distributed for free is because AT&T legally could not sell this operating system.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for that is that at the time when this was going on, AT&T was a telephone monopoly in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And as a telephone monopoly.
Virtual monopoly, yeah, anyway.
Essentially a monopoly. They don't have to be the only player to be a monopoly. They have to be the only mega major player.
Yeah, and they certainly were.
And so they were essentially a monopoly in the United States. And because they were, they had to operate under what is called a consent decree. And that consent decree meant that they could not branch into another industry like computers because they already held a monopoly over another industry. So they could not, by law, sell this operating system. So instead, they distributed it freely to these research facilities and universities, and they also offered up a license which allowed these different institutions to take the operating system and tweak it to their own needs. So Unix ended up propagating across a wide array of educational organizations and other institutions and became a solid foundation for students who are interested in programming, because now they suddenly had access to this operating system platform that they didn't have access to before, and it was free. So there was no cost to the students or to the universities, and it meant that the whole field of computer science accelerated exponentially, because there was suddenly access to very sophisticated tools that there wasn't before. So we started to see a lot more people going into programming. Eventually, this actually led to Richie writing a book, co-writing a book, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
And that book is the C programming language, but it's frequently referred to as the K&R book. And it's called K&R after the last names of the two authors. So Dennis Ritchie is the R. The K is Brian Kernighan.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you've ever heard anyone, or if you are a programmer, you think of the K&R book as being one of those sacred texts that that everyone values. If you've talked to a programmer and you've heard this phrase, that's what it refers to, is the C programming language. I remember Linus Torvalds talked about the K&R book, like being a big influence on him when he was getting into programming. And it's widely praised as a very accessible book on the subject of programming. And in part of that, it's because the C programming language itself is very relatively simple.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a very simple grammar and syntax, and is pared down to just the bare necessities. Not the song from the Jungle Book.
I didn't sing it.
It's going through my head already. But anyway,
it's
pared down, so it's very spare.
Right. Mm-hmm.
It's meant to be that way so that it doesn't take up a lot of space and everything runs really smoothly and quickly on a machine. We have a bit more we want to talk about as far as Dennis Ritchie goes, and so we will do that as soon as we come back from this quick break. Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices.
and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, we'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table, because geek culture is pop culture, and we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Eugene Fodor!
Gene, we'll boot it!
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene. And last hour on the business. I understand now. It's a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Gene. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to level up your marketing and business knowledge, then look no further than the Marketing School podcast hosted by Neil Patel and yours truly, Eric Sue. It is the number one marketing podcast in the United States and number 15 on business in the United States. And it has amazing guests such as Alex Hormozi, Layla Hormozi, Cody Sanchez. We pull in these amazing interviews with other people that are not only great marketers, but actual operators. And the icing on the cake is Neil and myself were also operators as well. So we share learnings from the trenches. We share secrets that we otherwise wouldn't be sharing with other people. And we also share other advantages that will help you get ahead of your competition. So all you have to do is listen to Marketing School every weekday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Running a business is no cakewalk. There is a ton to keep track of. Employees to keep happy, spending to control, travel to plan, and on top of it all, nobody knows exactly what the future holds. Your finance team always has to be ready to change. But with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is experience. And you can finally say goodbye to the costly mistakes and risks that come from manual work and spreadsheets. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
Hello! Acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Rosie, somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned. It feels so good.
It does. And like always, we'll be here every week covering the wide world of TV, movies, comics, and geek culture.
That's right. We'll be talking about Batman, heroes of that stature, and of course, We'll be inviting our friends in the industry to come geek out with us and share stories. We'll hear from TV writers, from actors, comics creators, pop culture critics, and more.
Nothing is off the table because geek culture is pop culture. And we can't wait to share our love of it all with you every single week.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene!
Eugene Fodor!
Gene, what's booted?
Much of the joy you will find on the road comes from the person you share it with.
So you write the books, Gene, and the last on the business. I understand now. It's a wise man who marries a wiser woman.
But be careful and choose your travel partner well, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
Get down!
I'm not stupid, Jean. Something is going on, and it's high time you tell me the truth.
Freeze, Americano!
Jean, run!
So travel before it's too late. Your money will return, your time won't, and we're all too quickly approaching that final destination.
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh,
yeah. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics, in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
So, interestingly enough, AT&T releases Unix out, right? Well, years later, they were no longer held under the consent decree. Turns out AT&T got a little bit of a they had a little breakup. with themselves.
Breaking up is hard to do.
All over the place. And lots of other companies came out of this whole AT&T thing. Well, once that happened, they said, hey, you know what? We want Unix again. So they started to try
We want our language back.
Yeah, they tried.
Operating systems.
They tried to, yeah, they, exactly. They tried to reestablish their proprietary hold over Unix.
Right.
As a result of that, it sort of helped. First of all, Unix being distributed throughout universities, that kind of started that seed of an idea of open source.
Right.
This idea of code that is created and then distributed freely, and then people can actually manipulate that code under certain specific circumstances.
Right.
And so that's kind of planted that seed. Well, once AT&T started to try and grab that back, that seed really started to blossom. And that's more or less what prompted Richard Stallman to create the GNU project, G-N-U. Mm-hmm. And GNU's acronym stands for, it's a recursive acronym, it stands for GNU's Not Unix.
Yes.
And it wasn't to dismiss what Ritchie and Thompson had done. It was more about the whole...
It was more about the ownership,
yes,
not the...
Exactly.
Creation of the,
yeah, it was the corporate side, not the programming side, that was sort of that prompted that. But Unix has turned out to be a really versatile and important operating system, and it provides the kernel for a lot of, or sometimes literally the kernel for a lot of other operating systems, including stuff that's found on web servers across the internet. Linux is not a direct derivative of Unix, but it is
informed
yes. by Unix,
and its very name, you can, it's sort of an homage.
Yeah,
of course,
so,
it's a play on Linus Torvalds' name,
right?
Because Linus and Linux, but the X you can tell is
so
giving
Linux,
them some love,
because everyone always gets on me whenever I say that Linux essentially comes from Unix, but I don't mean that Unix was manipulated to become Linux so much as Unix, Linus Torvalds used Unix as a blueprint for building what would become Linux.
It's a spiritual relative
rather
than a literal.
But Unix also provides the foundation for other operating systems. It was what Windows was built on for ages. It is the foundation of Mac OS X and iOS. If you were to actually dive into the Mac OS X operating system, you would find that it is based off the Berkeley distribution of Unix, which is also called BSD 4.2. So, I mean, it's everywhere. And then not only that, but the C programming language ended up inspiring other computer scientists to develop programming languages that were kind of an evolution of C. Because ultimately, there are other ways of programming computers, but the philosophy behind C programming pervades a lot of those languages, including object-oriented languages like C++ or Java, Python, Ruby. Those are sort of derivatives.
And both of those are designed to be very simple to use as well.
Yeah.
I think spiritually, if you will, again, to use that, the ideas that Richie and a lot of his colleagues, if you will, across different companies, basically a lot of the ideas that they came up with, things that they said, you know what, computing should be like this, you know, sort of unspoken tenets, they kind of stuck around. I think people have gone, you know what, these guys had something.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've inspired a lot of people, especially people like Dennis Ritchie have inspired people to emulate those and improve upon that work.
And a lot of the hardware that we see out there is built upon or with this C programming language. So that's the layer that exists on top of the actual physical hardware. It's, you know, they've created the functionality through the C programming language. And Ritchie has been recognized multiple times with awards and various accolades. I've got a list of them if you would like to hear some of them.
Well, that's the funny thing is I was going to say you might wonder why if this is the first time you've heard of Dennis Ritchie, you might say, well, he's done a lot for computing.
Yeah.
I mean, he's really influenced people all over the world. Why have we not really heard about him? And he was sort of a private guy. He a very hard worker. He'd come in at noon, leave in the middle of the afternoon, then go home and work until 3 a.m. sometimes. Not the kind of person that spent a lot of time on a road show appearing in the media, you know, to show off what he'd done. He wanted to improve on what he'd done and just kept working hard. But they did. He was recognized, by many people and got some very prestigious awards.
Yeah, in 1983, he received, along with Thompson, the Turing Award for their work with operating systems. So, of course, named after Alan Turing. We've done a full podcast about him as well. You should listen to that one. It's an interesting story. In 1990, he received the Richard W. Hamming Medal, along with Thompson, from my favorite organization in the world, just for the way I get to say its acronym, IEEE. Or IEEE. I never get tired of that. I know all of you do. In 97, Ritchie and Thompson were made fellows of the Computer History Museum, which I still want to go to. I have yet to make it out to Silicon Valley to check it out. In 99, Ritchie and Thompson again, they received the National Medal of Technology from Bill Clinton. In 2005, he received the Achievement Award from the Industrial Research Institute. And in 2011, Ritchie and Thompson received the Japan Prize for Information and Communications. So he's been recognized officially from various types of organizations multiple times. Although, of course, you could argue that these organizations are really only famous within the niche of computer programmers, which I think is fairly that's fair to say. It's not like they are thrust into the public eye like an Apple keynote always is. But yes, it is very clear that Ritchie played a pivotal role, really, to the development of computer science in our modern age, and that without his work, it would be very, very different. And we might not even have things like the smartphones that we use today, at least not in the form factor that we're used to and the functionality that we're used to. Mm-hmm. It might, you know, it's not to say that something else wouldn't have come along, but there's no way of knowing what that would have been. So our hat is off to you, Mr. Ritchie. Mm-hmm. Our world is better for you having worked in it. And so I'm glad that we took this time to really recognize him and talk about his life and his work, especially to you guys out there who may have not been familiar with him. And if you're interested in programming, if you want to get into it, the book that he co-wrote is considered one of the texts that you have to read.
Right.
And it's, and every single programmer I've ever talked to has praised it for its readability.
Yeah.
Saying that it's actually, for a book about programming languages, very easy to read.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I hope you enjoyed that classic episode. It was great to focus on a specific person. We rarely did that back in the early days of Tech Stuff. We would once in a while do a spotlight on a specific person as opposed to a technology, or once in a while a company. But I do it much more frequently these days. So maybe there's someone in technology you think I should focus on for a full episode. If you have suggestions like that, you can pop on over to the email client of your choice and type in the two-line techstuff@howstuffworks.com. You can also pop on over to our website. That's techstuffpodcast.com. There you're going to find an archive of all of our previous episodes. In fact, you might want to do a search just to make sure I haven't already done an episode about the particular person you have in mind. And you can also find links to our presence on social media. So you can contact me through Facebook or through Twitter. And you'll also find a link to our online store, where every purchase you make goes to help the show, and we greatly appreciate it. And I'll talk to you again really soon. Tech Stuff is a production of iHeartRadio's How Stuff Works. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Running a business is no cakewalk, but with SAP Concur Solutions, you can be ready for anything. You can manage travel, expenses, and AP all on one platform that's packed with AI and best practices, and that delivers it all through an easy, clear, I can't believe how simple that is, experience. So, while not much can be done about that guy who never fails to burn the microwave popcorn and stink up the entire office, with SAP Concur, you can easily handle almost anything else. Take control of your business finances today at concur.com. That's concur.com.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf at Adam. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to brand new on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
As important as choosing the right destination when traveling is choosing the right travel partner.
Gene! Gene Fodor!
Gene, what's good?
But be careful, because the worst trips result when two partners have two different agendas.
The CIA really need your help, Gene.
Freeze, Americano!
Gene, run!
Listen to Fodor's Guide to Espionage on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, acclaimed comics writer and notorious Scott Summers hater, Rosie Knight.
Well, hello, Emmy-winning podcaster and totally unbiased Targaryen royal supporter, Jason Concepcion.
Somehow the X-Ray Vision podcast has returned.
And like always, we'll be here every week.
You'll hear from TV writers, actors, comics creators, pop culture critics.
Nothing is off the table.
Listen to X-Ray Vision on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.